It is not true that one must leave Earth to appreciate the full splendor of the heavens. Not even in space is the starry sky more glorious than when viewed from a high mountain on a perfectly clear night, far from any source of artificial illumination. Even though the stars appear brighter beyond the atmosphere, the eye cannot really appreciate the difference, and the overwhelming spectacle of half the celestial sphere at a single glance is something that no observation window can provide. But Heywood Floyd was more than content with his private view of the universe, especially during the times when the residential zone was on the shadow side of the slowly revolving space hospital. Then there would be nothing in his rectangular field of view but stars, planets, nebulae, and occasionally, drowning out all else, the unblinking glare of Lucifer, new rival to the sun. About 10 minutes before the beginning of his artificial night, he would switch off all the cabin lights, even the red emergency standby, so that he could become completely dark-adapted. A little late in life for a space engineer, he had learned the pleasures of naked-eye astronomy and could now identify virtually any constellation, even if he could glimpse only a small portion of it. Almost every night that May, as the comet was passing inside the orbit of Mars, he had checked its location on the star charts. Although it was an easy object to find with a good pair of binoculars, Floyd had stubbornly resisted their aid. He was playing a little game, seeing how well his aging eyes would respond to the challenge. Though two astronomers on Mauna Kea already claimed to have observed the comet visually, no one believed them, and similar assertions from other residents of Pasteur had been treated with even greater skepticism. But tonight, a magnitude of at least 6 was predicted. He might be in luck. He traced the line from gamma to epsilon and stared toward the apex of an imaginary equilateral triangle set upon it, almost as if he could focus his vision across the solar system by a sheer effort of will. And there it was, just as he had first seen it 76 years ago, inconspicuous but unmistakable. If he had not known exactly where to look, he would not even have noticed it, or would have dismissed it as some distant nebula. To his naked eye, it was merely a tiny, perfectly circular blob of mist. Strain as he could, he was unable to detect any trace of a tail. But the small flotilla of probes that had been escorting the comet for months had already recorded the first outbursts of dust and gas that would soon create a glowing plume across the stars, pointing directly away from its creator, the sun. Like everyone else, Heywood Floyd had watched the transformation of the cold, dark, no, almost black nucleus as it entered the inner solar system. After 70 years of deep freeze, the complex mixture of water, ammonia, and other ices was beginning to thaw and bubble. A flying mountain roughly the shape and size of the island of Manhattan was turning on a cosmic spit every 53 hours. As the heat of the sun seeped through the insulating crust, the vaporizing gases were making Halley's Comet behave like a leaking steam boiler. Jets of water vapor, mixed with dust and a witch's brew of organic chemicals, were bursting out from half a dozen small craters. The largest, about the size of a football field, erupted regularly about 2 hours after local dawn. It looked exactly like a terrestrial geyser and had been promptly christened Old Faithful. Already he had fantasies of standing on the rim of that crater, waiting for the sun to rise above the dark, contorted landscape that he already knew well through the images from space. True, the contract said nothing about passengers, as opposed to crew and scientific personnel going outside the ship when it landed on Halley. On the other hand, there was also nothing in the small print that specifically forbade it. "They'll have a job to stop me," thought Heywood Floyd. "I'm sure I can still handle a spacesuit. And if I'm wrong." He remembered reading that a visitor to the Taj Mahal had once remarked, "I'd die tomorrow for a monument like this." He would gladly settle for Halley's Comet.